there was never going to be any other way for me.
Mm.
It was always going to be out of being completely stubborn and being like last man standing.
Yeah.
You know, like think how many other people have like, we've just like lost along the way because they just realized that they weren't ever going to make any money
from
being a musician.
Hello and welcome to episode 45 of Attention Engineer. And this is my podcast. Hi! Attention Engineer is a show where I seek to make the best use of my own valuable time and attention by having deep conversations with fellow artists about creativity, grit, and determination. My aim is to consistently remind you and remind myself that creativity really is for everyone, because it really is. Join me and let's kick that inner critic where it hurts. If you're new here, welcome. And if you're a returning listener, welcome back. Thank you for pressing play on this episode when you could have clicked on an infinite number of other things. I never take you for granted. I've been thinking a lot about consistency recently. I've just started week 5 of a 12-week experiment prompted by a book called The 12-Week Year. The idea is to focus in on 1 to 3 goals that you'd like to make really good progress on over that 12-week period. Break those down into weekly actions and then concentrate on executing those actions consistently. At the end of every week, you score yourself, not on the results of those actions, but on whether you executed them or not. Did I go running 3 times? Yes. How far and how fast? Doesn't matter. Did I spend Wednesday writing music for the Obey Robots album? Yes. Did I write the best song anyone's ever written? And if not, should I just give up forever and lie on the sofa? Doesn't matter. Just turn up again next week. Weeks 1 to 3 felt energizing and game-changing, but week 4 was a grind. I felt like I was going through the motions, I wasn't finding much joy in what I was doing, even though I was ticking actions off my list and spending my days on the things I care about. How lucky am I? It's just that the initial excitement of trying something new had worn off, and I did feel like throwing in the towel. Then I remembered that before starting the 12 weeks of action, the book had invited me to write an aspirational vision, a view of what my future life could look like 10 to 15 years in the future. How am I spending my time? Where am I living? What goals have I achieved and what am I reaching for next? After writing that down, the next exercise was to work backwards, looking at my life 3 years into the future. How are things going then on the way to my 15-year vision? Yesterday morning, I spent some time reading through my aspirational vision and reminding myself why I made this list of actions to execute on a weekly basis. Then I ate Maltesers and lay on the sofa. But today, I feel re-energized. These days, for me, it's not enough to make long lists of things I think I should do and haphazardly try to attack them. I need a really good reason why I'm spending my time on what I'm spending my time on. Making this podcast is the first truly consistent thing I've ever done, because I know why I'm doing it. The reasons don't necessarily stay the same week to week and month to month, but the core values do. I make this show to open the lid on the creative process for you, the listener, to demonstrate to you and to myself that creativity is something we can all access, whatever we do in our lives. On a personal level, I love having a reason to speak to fellow artists about their creative process, their hopes and fears, dreams and disappointments, because it makes me feel less alone in what I'm doing, and it makes me realise that I'm not doing it all wrong, that we all have our individual paths, and that there are many, many ways of building your own creative career. In the last episode, I announced to you that I'm committing to uploading a new video for YouTube every week for the next 10 weeks, one of my 3 12-week year goals. Since I told you that, I have uploaded 2 videos, and this Saturday, come what may, I'll be uploading my 3rd, because consistency is what makes a difference. I'm interested in exploring topics around the core values of this podcast and the wider Penfriend project in a focused, practical way, and YouTube feels like the best place for that, with the topics from this podcast feeding into the videos I make. At the start of the show, I say, let's kick that inner critic where it hurts. And my latest video gives tips on how to do just that. Plus, there are unicorns. Come and watch at youtube.com/penfriendrocks. I'll put the link in the show notes for you as well. All of this leads neatly to today's guest, Mary Spender, and the timing of this conversation really couldn't have been better. I met Mary in Bristol in 2013 at a venue called the Louisiana. It was an unusual evening. I'd been invited to come and answer questions about my music in front of an audience. Some of my music videos were screened, and then we all went down into the basement where I played a live set. I was experiencing major imposter syndrome that night because I just wasn't used to being the focus of the whole event. I'm not sure I'd be comfortable with that now either, to be honest, but I remember feeling very distracted when Mary and I were introduced and doing that pointless thing I sometimes do where I assume the other person thinks I suck. So weird and such a waste of time. A while later, Mary got in touch and we started meeting up for the occasional lunch where we talked at length about the different ways we were trying to do things as independent musicians. It was such a boost to get to talk to someone honestly and openly about how hard it could be sometimes, how impermeable the music industry itself seemed to be, and whether there could be a better way of doing things. I found my better way through crowdfunding and then my paid members club, the Correspondence Club, and Mary turned to YouTube and Patreon. She moved to Brighton a few years ago, and it's been a real delight to watch her grow her audience over the last 5 years, from pretty much zero to nearly 500,000 subscribers, building a full-time artistic career from nothing. I'm so pleased Mary agreed to be a guest on this show because to me, she's a real-world example of how consistently grafting away in the right places can lead to a sustainable artistic career that doesn't rely on the confusing whims of the music business. So, let me introduce you to Mary. Combining her sultry voice and electric guitar to create rock songs infused with blues and soul, Mary Spender's songwriting showcases her virtuosic style of guitar playing as well as her wide vocal range. Mary has so far amassed over 46 million hits on her YouTube channel, with nearly 500,000 subscribers watching her weekly videos, predominantly targeted towards guitarists and singer-songwriters. She also offers online courses in Ableton Live with producer Rachel K. Collier and fingerstyle guitar for beginners on her website, maryspender.com. Here we go.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm good. I've been watching your videos again to refamiliarise myself with all of your awesome stuff. It's great. Mary Spender. I know we don't have a lot of time, so I'm just going to dive right in. We can catch up during this, if that's all right.
Yeah, sure.
Could you introduce yourself for my listeners, please, in case they have not heard your name before and know what you're about?
Well, I'm Mary Spender. I'm a singer-songwriter, but I also make YouTube videos about music, guitars, creativity, all that malarkey. Yeah. And we go way back.
We do. I think the last time I saw you, we had lunch and you were telling me about Snapchat, about how I should be spending time on Snapchat. And I was like...
That sounds like me.
Yeah, I was like, I don't disagree with you, but I also only have so much time. So I was like, you're right, but I'm not going to. And I'm in the wrong and you are right, but I just can't. But I was just like, yeah, sure. And we talked about Snapchat. And then, not overnight, because it's taken you maybe 5 years of a lot of hard work, mm-hmm. you now have nearly 500,000 subscribers on your YouTube channel.
Yes.
And what I love about that is that I knew you when you didn't have any. So you're a real person who has done a lot of work and got yourself to a place. You're not someone I've heard of who already has that, if you see what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
The growth has been actually real.
Yeah.
You know, obviously it's real for everyone, but I've seen that be real. So I love that. I'm so in awe of what you've done.
Well, I was thinking about one of our conversations at the Louisiana, you know, I don't even know when that was, 2013?
7 million years ago.
Yeah, a long time ago. And we were talking about social media and you had a great following that, you know, back then, let alone now. And it was just really inspiring the way you were using it. So I think it sort of gave me the confidence just to be like, okay, well, there are other routes, other ways to make it in music without going down the record label route.
Yeah.
And it just takes a lot of bloody hard work, really.
It's a lot sitting in that chair, me sitting in this chair.
Yeah.
All the glamour all the time is one of my favourite mottos.
All the glamour all the time.
All glamour all the time. Whenever I was sitting backstage, you know, eating pasta out of a pot with a broken piece of cup because there was no cutlery, I'd be like, mm-hmm. it's all going to be worth it one day.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you realise, like, it's just all a long slog and it's never as glamorous as you sort of thought it might be.
No.
I kind of thought by this point with YouTube, it'd be like a lot easier. And actually, it's just the same. It's the same.
Well, you put a lot of stuff out though. How many? It's a couple of, at least a couple a week, isn't it? A couple of videos a week.
Yeah, at the moment it's always at least one a week.
Yeah.
Depending on all the other stuff, and even that is tricky sometimes. But yeah, no, I try and stay consistent to play the game. You know how it is.
Yeah, of course. But I love also that you've switched the slog of, you know, going up and down the country, obviously pre-pandemic times, going up and down the country playing support slots, and you know your own headlines and stuff. Swapping that slog for a different slog. And I feel like I'm also trying to swap that slog for a different slog. And this was also pre-pandemic. I decided to take a break from live to do something else and launch the Penframe project and everything. And then, you know, the world went mad and we're in this situation, whether we like it or not. But I'm just really interested in that because you just sort of clearly saw the light about 5 years before I did. Was that a conscious thing? Did you do that on purpose?
2017. So yeah, January 2017. Well, no. Yeah, September 2016 was like when I started making specific YouTube videos.
Yeah.
It wasn't that I saw the light. I did see creators who were notoriously underpaid, underappreciated, suddenly doing really well, building businesses by just doing their own thing on YouTube rather than going down the traditional pathways, whether it's filmmakers, photographers, bassists, guitar teachers, you know, I just saw this other thing. And it was also just that I had no other choice because I was working 9 to 5 in a finance temp job for £8 an hour. And I just didn't really have anything to lose. Like I was doing gigs on the weekend in Bristol, treading the boards continuously and doing the 4-hour cover sets because those gigs were actually paid, and then doing the 1/2-hour support slots for free and just doing that because I was like grateful to play original music, obviously. Yeah. But it just got to a point where I was like, well, if I keep doing that, then I'm burning those hours just doing that. What if I, even if I get 300 hits on a video, that's 300 times the creation of the video. Yeah. And then luckily, like, well, I mean, it took a long, long time, but like it worked and I'm relieved obviously that it worked for me, but it's also nice, for other people to see that it worked for someone like me where I was never going to be a commercial success.
Yeah.
And I had to, you know, be brave enough to learn these other things that were away from music. So presenting to camera, editing, all the other stuff that goes on behind the scenes. But yeah, so hopefully there'll just be plenty more of us, really.
Can I just say, when you said you were never going to be a commercial success, and I just said yes, I wasn't agreeing with you in a really horrible way now. But people might be thinking, oh, that's mean of Laura to agree. What I meant was, how many people would be, though?
Exactly.
Because those odds are so ridiculous to get commercially successful. It doesn't just mean a brilliant song that rises to the top. I don't think that ever happens. I think there's a huge machine that goes into all of that stuff. And that's just not accessible. And I've just put a record out and I spent some money on PR. It was all wasted. And the PR people were very nice. They're very nice to email every week going, has there been anything? No. Perfectly pleasant people doing their very best in a system that doesn't work in the way that I would love it to work. So, about a year and a half ago, I was thinking, I don't want to drive up and down the country anymore doing this. It doesn't seem to be doing anything. And I kept hearing this phrase around the place, quite a lot on YouTube, actually. I'm really into Matt Diavella and Thomas Frank and Ali Abdal, who I think you know, and lots of different people who do these really interesting videos that make me think, what am I doing? And the phrase was, what got you here won't get you there.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I've got here by hard graft and touring and, you know, releasing albums independently and all that. And I'm very proud of that. But the sort of very slow incremental growth thing is, you know, not particularly satisfying. So I was trying to think of different ways, hence starting this podcast and hence my new foray into a bit of YouTube, inspired by people like you and the others I've mentioned.
Yeah.
So I think it's just so smart. And every time I sort of checked in with your channel, I was like, holy shit, this is brilliant. It's working. You know, all of your hard work.
It really works. It really works. Yeah. But it's just consistency. Yeah. So when people, I used to try and persuade everyone to start a YouTube channel.
Yeah.
And then I just realized, no. I'll wait for people to come to me and ask me questions about a YouTube channel. Like if they're interested and they're taking that initiative, because it's not for everyone. It's definitely a different thing. But if you actually uploaded a video, not you, I mean, one in general, if you upload a video 10 minutes long every week, same time, same day, so people know when you're going to upload, and you do that for the next 2 years and don't expect to make any money, you'll make it. Like you'll build an audience.
Yeah.
Preferably around a topic that you actually know about and something kind of like the more niche, the better. So if it's, you know, like I started off with guitar pedals.
Yeah.
That's not even applicable to every single guitarist because only a portion of guitarists play electric guitar, let alone then are in the pedal. It's just like as niche as possible. Find your, first 1,000 fans, and then it kind of just gets out of hand. And then it just keeps growing, and it grows so slowly, which is actually like the best thing, because then you adjust and you learn and you make mistakes and you fail. And then YouTube just kicks you in the face and says, oh no, here's a almost successful video, but no, we're not going to make it super successful for you just yet. And then it will, you'll fail over and over again, or someone won't like the video or whatever. Many people won't like the videos. And then finally, like years later, it might hand you, and obviously there are exceptions to this rule, but it might hand you a viral video. And then you crash back down and you have to keep up the consistency, and then it might hand you another one, potentially, maybe not. It's crazy. I obviously didn't expect it to get this far because, I've had many, many years of no one watching or listening or caring. And that was okay, because thank God those years no one cared, because I was a bit crap.
We get used to that sort of like, oh, I did a thing and the world didn't throw a public holiday for me.
Yeah.
I put a record out and some people care and I love them the most. But most people don't, because we don't make things for the world. We make things for people who will like us, And I think it's the same on YouTube.
Yeah.
I've been a bit obsessively watching like how to find your niche and all this stuff, all those videos that people make. There's these weird pyramid scheme channels that are only huge because they're talking about how to be huge on YouTube. It's so weird. So that's why I think you're especially good, is because you actually do something and you talk about the something that you do. You don't talk about doing something, if you see what I mean. The distinction is quite different for me.
Yeah, well, it's always a bit nerve-wracking. I'm in awe of people who profess to be experts about something, because I just immediately think, well, that's the first step to becoming a dinosaur and being outdated in that field. So it's just always better to be constantly learning. Like, hey, I'm learning along with you guys, so please bear with me. But also come along with the journey, join in on the discussion of whatever it is you're learning. But also, like, I'm really grateful that I put in the 10,000 hours of music before starting my YouTube channel. Because although I'm not the most proficient guitarist, I'm not the best singer, I'm not the best songwriter, I'm definitely not the best YouTube filmmaker, but I can do all those things. And then now I have the freedom to be able to spend the time fully on a creative life, to be able to keep improving and then improve along with it. So I'm proud of the slog as well, because people come across my channel and they're like, oh, you just sit in your room all day and make YouTube videos. I was like, mate, you don't know. You don't know how many times I played to three people, the three people being, the headline act.
Yep. If they bothered to stay.
If they even bothered, they were probably eating in the dressing room. The sound engineer. And then my dad, probably. Well, especially when I was really young gigging. My dad would have to obviously come to shows before I was 18. So, it's been fun.
You built this all yourself, Do you feel proud of that?
Definitely. Yeah.
Good.
And then I sort of think, you probably feel the same way. It's like there was never going to be any other way for me. It was always going to be out of being completely stubborn and being like last man standing. Yeah. You know, like think how many other people have like, we've just like lost along the way because they just realized that they weren't ever going to make any money from being a musician. So they were like, oh, it seems like a lot of effort. I'll just be a hobbyist. And then they go and do other degrees or become accountants or, you know. And I'm just like, well, I'm pretty glad that I just kept at it.
There seems to be an age where people start peeling off, and I don't think any less of them at all. I think if you choose to do something else, that's awesome. Like, please go and have a happy life that's a little bit less difficult than this. Yeah. I think it's really smart. People choose to have families and need to commit. They need to be bringing in enough money for that as well, men and women.
Definitely.
I know lots of men who have had to leave their bands because they decided to have a family and it's not enough, you know, they can't spend the time anymore. And it's just such a shame because so much great music and stuff that isn't being made because it's so impossible to make enough money out of it to survive.
Yeah.
So finding other ways, I mean, especially, I've done that as well with my correspondence club, which is my like handmade Patreon type thing. Mm-hmm. And you've done it through YouTube, but also through online courses, Patreon. It's just super smart of you, though. I think it's great.
Thank you.
I do have questions. I'm not just going to give you loads of compliments. I do have actually some questions. Can we talk about the whole John Mayer thing? Because that's bonkers, isn't it?
It's completely bonkers. Yeah.
Could you explain for people who are listening who probably, no offense, like I don't know that people who listen to this podcast are as into YouTube as even I am, let alone you know, as involved as you are. Can you explain the John Mayer thing?
So I've been a very long time John Mayer fan because of his guitar playing, most of all. And then I sort of discovered him at like 18, 19 and just heard the way he played guitar and wrote songs using the guitar. And I was like, okay, I'm sold. Whatever this guy does, I'll probably enjoy it. So started trying to mimic him guitar playing wise, kind of failed, but found my own style by doing so. Mm-hmm. And in a very niche particular style of guitar playing. And I've met him a few times, but never as a peer, always as a fan. So I met him January 2017. He was doing a press conference. I snuck into the press conference and ended up at the front of it next to some camera guys. And Paul Reed Smith, who's a guitar maker, was standing right next to him. And they said, oh, after half an hour of just chatting about this guitar amp, they're like, oh, do you want to, does anyone want to ask any questions? I had no interview experience whatsoever. So I didn't even introduce myself. I just asked some stupid question. He ended up worrying about his answer. So he sort of overspoke and I filmed all of it and then put it up on YouTube. And that was kind of like the beginning of my association of being a fan with John Mayer, basically on YouTube. And I had 300 subscribers at that time. Those vlogs of that event, which is called NAMM, started doing pretty well. But so I think I went back to NAMM in 2019? And again, there was another press conference because he was doing a signature guitar. And I got to just meet him for a hot second, take a selfie with him. It was super awkward. And I kind of like, it was in front of loads of other people and there were just loads of people crowded around. And I was like, oh, this is not the way to meet the guy that literally changed your musical career. So went away feeling like, oh, this is just, it's never going to be equal. It's never going to be that. And that's fine. But when they say don't meet your idols, it's like, definitely don't meet your idols in front of like hundreds of other people who are also trying to make their mark on him and make an impression on him.
Yeah.
So obviously then COVID, no travel, no NAMM, 21, January 21. There was one in January 2020. But in March, he was uploading to TikTok, you know, the new Snapchat, which I don't even upload to properly yet. Still figuring that all out. And you know how, as you said, time is limited. But he was uploading snippets and I was in this room and I was looking on TikTok and I was like, oh my God, why is John Mayer on TikTok? But he was revealing some parts of his new songs that I assumed would be out that week. You know, like there's only, you only need to tease for so long now because people, it's just everything's so much faster paced than it used to be. So it was a Tuesday. I was like, I think I'm going to write the rest of the song because that would be fun. And I was like, oh, I should vlog it, I guess. So I do, as of earlier this year, I actually have an editor now. And I called him and I was like, John, I've got an idea. I think other people, he's also called John. I think someone else will do this because this guy is releasing this to millions of followers. Surely someone else will write the song before it comes out. Surely. I was like, it's one of those ideas that just felt so good and made me feel a bit nervous and a bit sick as well, but like in a good way where I was like, my God, if I don't jump on this idea now, then someone else will do it. So the next 48 hours, I wrote the song, finished the song using his little snippets, recorded it, produced it, and then filmed a music video and then made a YouTube video about the process of making John Mayer's new single before he did, expecting it to be released at midnight on the Friday. So we got it up at 7:30 p.m. on a Thursday, which is like way past my normal upload time. But I was like, this needs to go out like as soon as it's ready.
Yeah.
And I, within 2 hours, I had to do some calls with my patrons afterwards and was just sat in the studio. I was like, okay, got that video done. Didn't pay attention to it. Went over to my videographer's house just to debrief and talk and chat because we were in a work bubble. Remember those days when you actually could only see like not anyone? I was in an Uber, got outside my friend's door and my editor rang me and he was like, 2 hours. And I was like, 2 hours? What are you on about? He's like, 2 hours. And I was like, John, what are you on about? I was really tired. And he went, you haven't checked Instagram. And I was like, no, really? And he was like, get off the phone right now and check Instagram. And so I did. And John Mayer had watched the video and then taken a screenshot of actually quite flattering, not even the thumbnail. It was like a flattering picture of me playing his signature guitar. And then broadcast it to 5 million of his followers. And he was very flattering in the, he sort of said, oh, Mary Spender beat me to it. I snooze, I lose. And then he was just really complimentary about it. And yeah, so he saw the video. It was sent through a mutual friend who's a pedal builder, Josh Scott. I'll have to shout him out, JHS Pedals. And and then so John Mayer saw it. And then 2 months later, like we had like a little DM conversation and I was just freaking out. My heart rate was really high. I could literally see it on my Apple Watch. And my friend was gathered around and I was like, can I say this? And he was like, yeah. And I was like, okay. And so I was just trying to be funny as well on DMs with John Mayer. And then sort of, you know, didn't bother him for a few more months, but the record never came out. And so my video was just sat there just being his new single before his new single. That's awesome. And then late May? I don't know. I was in a bit of a funk actually one day. And I don't know why. I think I'd had a hectic weekend or something. And I was just on my phone, and I'm never on my phone late at night. Like, I really try and stay away from it. And I just clicked onto Instagram and I had a DM, you know, a few months later from John Mayer being like, hey, have you heard the new? Because I think someone leaked it before I was actually out, but it got ripped, you know, taken down. And he was like, do you want to hear it? I'll send you a Dropbox link before. And yeah, so he sent me his new single before anyone else heard it, but he remembered. And I was like, okay, what is my life? this is mad. And then he contributed a little voice note to the follow-up video where I actually got to listen to it on camera and listen to whether or not mine was close, which other than the bits that he gave, it wasn't that close. There were a few lyrics that might have potentially almost been there, but not quite. But yeah, and then he shared that video again. So it was just this surreal thing.
So cool.
And then recently he sent me a box of like merchandise, which was kind of cool. So I have a...
Can you get a record player?
I got a record player and a record.
From John Mayer.
And a Diptyque candle, which is a bit of a joke for him. He did this whole like... He's trying to be a comedian sometimes. I don't know whether you've ever seen any of his... He's actually quite good. It's... Faux de bois or something, but he was going he was doing this comedy sketch about it being for the boys, because right. it's kind of spelled that way. And so my mum texted me the other day. She was like, well, that candle was like £90. That's very generous of him. And I was like, yeah, I think John Mayer can afford it.
Yeah.
It's and it's okay. not even John Mayer paying for it, is it? So it's all a bit mad. And obviously my closest friends know how crazy it is.
Yeah.
And yeah, so John Mayer knows my name, which is pretty cool for a girl from Salisbury who likes playing guitar. Feels pretty cool.
That is cool. But you made an effort.
Yeah.
You made a big effort. That's the thing. Stuff doesn't happen to you unless you do stuff, you know?
Yeah, quite right.
And you do stuff. And you do stuff that's of high quality and that is, like, the intention's really good. You weren't trying to rip him off or make him look silly or anything like that.
No.
I think it's just done with pure fan love, you know? And it's...
Yeah.
Of course he remembers your name. You're the woman who made his single for him.
Before him? Yeah.
I don't know that anyone else has done that.
I know. And I've sort of thought about doing it again, not for John Mayer, but for other artists. Yeah. And then I just sort of have like this, I don't know, I just have the memories of the actual process behind that video. And I'm like, oh, I don't know if I have the time and dedication to be able to do it again or whether, you know, people would watch it again. But I don't know. There might be other opportunities as well.
Yeah.
Because it's really a fun challenge. And also like... Yeah. It's kind of an insane thing to try and do, write a song yeah. before someone else has released it, you know?
Yeah, sneaking in there.
Yeah.
You mentioned the word consistency earlier, which I love. I'm all about that now.
Mm-hmm.
So saying like in the last year and a half or so, really trying to treat certain things as commitments, the commitments they should be, rather than having doing music at the end of your task list for the week. At some point, I'll sit down and work on some music. It's a very general, fluffy thing to say. And I think a lot of people listening might have the same thing with many other creative pursuits. Mm-hmm. So at what point, because you clearly have decided to be consistent, you know, use the word yourself, and that is a big thing on YouTube. But was there a point where you decided to treat this as work? And if so, like, when was that and how's that changed things for you?
Do you know what? I still don't believe it's work.
Yeah.
I was in here with my videographer friend and we were just sorting out my lighting and I kept being like, okay, let's just hurry up because I probably need to get back to work. And I was like, wait, this is my job to make videos. So I have to make them look good. So we have to spend time on that sort of stuff now. And I still just see it as playtime. And I think that's when you get dangerous almost. And I mean, dangerous in like a good way, like in a, because as soon as you find something that is just playtime, it's really easy to be consistent.
Yeah.
Not to say it's always easy. It doesn't feel great all the time. But yeah, the consistency thing happened. I started publishing videos in September 2016, but I'd created a series called Tuesday Talks that was never, ever available on a Tuesday. It was always like I hit it on... You know, I kind of like got it finished on the Wednesday, but I would like film it on the Tuesday. And then right. I started realizing, I was like, it's called Tuesday Talks. You have to actually create it before the Tuesday and then upload it on the Tuesday, Mary. And I just had maybe like 3 people asking where it was when it didn't come out 1 week. And I was like, oh, there are people who I didn't know. They weren't friends. And I was like, oh my God. Okay. I should probably get on board with this then.
Yeah.
So instead of doing daily vlogging in January when I was away in California, I just shot all the vlogs and then edited them and then just scheduled them out for the next 4 weeks. And I was like, okay, I just made 4 weeks of content. Right, okay. And I was working a full-time job until January 2019. So I had to just spend my evenings thinking about it. There were a lot of Monday evenings that were, you know, 4 a.m., finishes because I'd forgotten to get it done, but I knew I had to play the game. And I came up with like a pretty easy way of making YouTube videos by just doing interviews with people back when you could do it in person, you know? Yeah. And they were from anyone, like guitarists I kind of knew and would just schedule it in and just get it done. I just put the camera down one angle, record the audio kind of separately, a bit closer to us, and then just use that. And then that would be my weekly upload. And just sort of introducing people to other artists for a long time, but then started realizing it's hard to get hold of people and can't keep going through your friends. So would just start talking about topics myself. And now it's sort of evolved and I don't do Tuesday talks. I sort of save that for special occasions and specific interviews. Mm. But now I just make, you know, music themed or creativity themed videos and just enjoy it, or just about guitars really, which is my one true passion.
Such a guitar nerd. I love it.
I'm such so a guitar into nerd. It. I actually bought a guitar yesterday, Monday, that I've been wanting for 4 years and finally like traded in some stuff and got it. And the grin on my face, I literally caught myself under my mask grinning like an absolute 13-year-old that I was when I bought my first guitar, 12, 13. And I was like, ah, okay, I'm in the right job.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's great to have those moments, isn't it? I mean, you work really hard. You do deserve the guitar of your dreams, I think. That's okay. Life is short. Get the guitar if you can.
Yeah, and I can completely justify it now because I make a video about a guitar and it pays for itself. So it's like, okay, I should probably keep investing in that. It's so many, like so many people online love hearing a guitar because they don't have access to it, especially with guitar shops closing all over the place or being completely closed during COVID. So it's a cool thing to share with other people.
Definitely. What's your current relationship with smartphones and social media? So you mentioned trying not to look at your phone late at night. And I can imagine, like, just from my brief experience of a YouTube studio, I can imagine it would be very easy to spend a lot of time going, how many people have watched my video? How many people have watched my video every day, and getting a bit obsessed?
Yeah, I definitely went through a phase where I was completely obsessed, and I've sort of, I have a work relationship with social media, and I don't know whether you feel the same, because I've had a MySpace page since, and like a Bebo page since I was like 15 that was dedicated to music. So I've always been like, okay, be careful, like don't put up too much personal information and that sort of thing. So when it comes to social media in general, I definitely have always seen it as like a tool for music. But yeah, like I'm guilty as anyone, especially over the last 18 months, like just being tied to my phone. You know, whether that's reading the news or just like scrolling through Instagram, looking at people having a nicer time than everyone else. So I have a difficult relationship with it sometimes, but it's not completely unhealthy. And I actually really try and turn my phone over and try and do deliberate work, you know, away from it. YouTube Studio, the thing I hate about it is that it shows you the three most recent comments on your whole library of videos,
right?
Which other people don't see. So people would maybe check the comments and read the comments when a new video has gone live and everything. And then, but when people are finding my videos at different times and becoming aware of me at completely, you know, out of sync kind of, they'll then join in the conversation later. Most of the time it's positive, but I do see negative comments, obviously. Mm-hmm. And other people don't see that. So they just sort of expect that everything's really positive and nice and fluffy. When the reality is that there are people discovering me, not really understanding what's going on, then, you know, sharing their opinion about that. Mm. And those comments just sort of should sink to the bottom almost, but they're there on the app. I don't respond to every single comment anymore. But yeah, it's, you know, it's part of the game, freedom of speech. They actually add to the success of your video. So even no matter what they're saying, having a little interaction with the video is actually a good thing. So I think the best thing to do if you hate a video is just not comment on it and just not click on the channel, because like every little click, every little, you know, typing away of a comment, it's actually just putting money in the creator's bank account, whether or not you like them, which I just don't think people realize. How do I deal with them? Ignore them. And I hate the idea of the bullied becoming the bully, you know, when people set their audience live on someone who's just sat at home and probably a little bit sad or going through something. You just never know what they're going through on the other end. And I just kind of try and have empathy for whatever, because I've never spent 5 minutes hating on someone's YouTube video, mainly because I know the hard work that goes into it. And I'm like, even if I don't like the person or don't like the video, I just stay silent. But yeah, it's been a process. And I started boxing in 2017 when I first had my entry into the comment section, not in a positive way. And that's really helped. And fitness and having other things other than social media in my life that I keep pretty private, or, you know, and actually the best mental thing I do sometimes, you know, sort of like a thought process around it, is I say to myself, if I see something and it's bad and it kind of affects me, I just go, wait, are they here? Are they here? Like trying to hurt me? No, if I turn over my phone, they don't exist, you know? So you can kind of like just take that away. And then recently I read The Power of Now. So I'm like really trying to be super zen and present, following, you know, that trend. And it's helped, because I think as a creative, it's so easy to live in your past because you're trying to draw on your experiences as a songwriter and use that to create your future.
Yeah.
So you're never actually like, just like, oh, hey, we're actually having a nice conversation right now. You're like thinking about being super driven about, oh my God, what's the next business opportunity? Or what's that heartbreak that I can talk about to write that song?
Yeah.
So yeah, just still trying to figure it out. And it's still a journey. Still, I have good days, bad days, but majority wise, I just like try and stay level.
Yeah.
Because it's a long game. And it's only going to get bigger and worse. So, I mean, in a good way, you know, like, the pool of people will just, you know, it hopefully, obviously, unless I do something terribly wrong, it will keep growing. And, you know, people also become accustomed to you as well. So they might hate you at first, but then they just like keep getting recommended your videos and then they kind of end up liking you. And that's always the funniest thing. But people are like, I really hated you at first, but now I kind of get you. And I'm like, cool, thank you very much.
What a great compliment.
Yeah.
Well, it's just the war of attrition then. I feel the same about my music. I'm just going to keep putting albums out and albums out until someone's like opening the door. It's going to keep going. I'm not going away.
Yeah.
Get used to it.
Yeah. Exactly. That's the right mindset. Also, like, you just have to know that the numbers don't matter. Pleasing other people literally doesn't matter. It's like, do you enjoy the process of actually making that music or making those videos or doing that podcast or whatever it is? Because if you don't enjoy that, then you're not going to be able to stick at it forever. And the whole game is that we want to be the last people standing. And we want to be doing this till we're 90. Like, I really hope I'm making YouTube videos at 90. I think that'd be really badass.
I hope so too. And you know what? We've survived Snapchat. We've survived MySpace. As we've met, you know, the two platforms we've mentioned, Survive Pledge Music. Let's not go into that. But and various others. I feel like sometimes my job is just to outlast software or outlast platforms.
Play the game while it's there, but don't be too crushed when it disappears. And that's what I feel about YouTube. Like, if YouTube disappears tomorrow, it's like, well, I had a really good run. But the likelihood of all these platforms are becoming so well established now, and then they're not disappearing as quickly. Obviously, some come and go, but it's more worrying about like, what content are you making that would alienate yourself from your audience? Like, we see YouTubers who were really popular in like 2011, just they're still either making the same content on you know, on these tiny little crappy cameras. And because they haven't like upped their game or changed their style or evolved, people just get bored of them and then they kind of fade. So it's always about like upping your game for your own sake as well as the viewer's sake. So now I have to make videos in 4K, which I was like, I never want to do that, but I had to play the game. And, you know, same with TikTok. Like, I'm still trying to figure out what I could do on TikTok.
Yeah.
I'll play the game while it's there. If it disappears, fine, but it's all brand awareness, so just kind of like be everywhere always, and make it scalable for yourself as well. Like, make it as easy as possible. Document yourself doing the thing that you're already doing, and then it's a hell of a lot easier to keep up with it too.
Definitely. And so for anyone listening who wants to be a bit more creative in their own lives, what one piece of advice would you give them to get started?
whatever it is that you see other people doing that makes you green with envy, do it. Don't just look at them and be like, they're doing something that... Just like, go and try it. Try it out. And suck at it. Like, make terrible art over and over and over again. And don't worry about it. And actually, sometimes, like, don't show your friends and family, because they'll probably have an opinion about it that you won't like. Either if it's good or bad, it's actually not useful. You have to enjoy it. Are you proud of what you're putting out? And that's what I had to do, because at first, like, my parents would always, I'd like play them a new song and they'd be like, and I just realized they're not my audience. The same with videos. Like, they'd be like, really? You want to do that? And I was like, and then I'd just doubt it, and then I wouldn't put it out. And I was like, it's better it's out there, and then you see the progression than not being anywhere. So
You need to find your people. Yeah, who find that to be useful or entertaining or whatever it is. Yeah, they're not necessarily going to be your nearest and dearest, are they?
No, definitely not. My parents really hold you do back. Not know anything about guitars or pedals or anything like that.
I'm sure they excel in other areas. That's the thing. We all have our different niches, as you were saying earlier.
Absolutely.
Their niche is not guitar. That's yours.
No. My mum does have amazing... This is just a funny tidbit. She has amazing taste in music. She's always on Spotify finding the next best thing. And she introduced me to Kendrick Lamar way back.
Oh, wow.
That's how cool my mum is.
That's really cool.
I know.
Good one, mum.
But anyway, I digress.
Amazing. I just want to say thank you so much. We should probably catch up, not recorded at some point, because there's loads more going on, isn't there?
Yeah. Absolutely. Me too.
Maybe I'll book in with you again sometime, if that's all right.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Thank you very much, Mary, for chatting to me. It's been lovely to see you.
It's been lovely to see you too. And thanks for having me.
Thanks. I hope you're itching to watch some of Mary's videos now, which you can find on her website, maryspender.com, along with her music, online courses, and mailing list. I've created a deluxe show notes page at penfriend.rocks/Mary and featured her John Mayer videos there. Such a great story. If you'd like to listen to another Attention Engineer episode after this one, I think episode 44 with Ken Stringfellow of the Posies is a really nice continuation, where we talk about saying yes to opportunities and putting in the work. As is episode 11 with Skating Polly, where we talk about the importance of dedication. If you're new here, do make sure you visit my website, penfriend.rocks, to pick up 2 free songs and receive thoughtful letters about art and music from yours truly. This podcast is an ad-free zone, but I do welcome sponsorship from listeners. So if you'd like to find out more about that, head to penfriend.rocks/podcast and click sponsor. Giant thanks and love always to my Correspondence Club members for powering the making of this show and all my music. I'll be back in 2 weeks' time to share another deep conversation with a very exciting guest, so I hope to catch you then. Till then, take care.